Welcome everybody. Just two quick announcements. Please try to stay for the talk. It's fairly disruptive when someone in the middle gets up. And if you have questions later, keep it to questions. Discussions can happen after. So let's give it up for our first non-CEF talk.
Yes. Hi everyone, my name is Shriya. I hope I'm audible. Yeah. So my name is Shriya. I'm currently working with IBM. I'm a part of CEF and ODF team. And with me, I have Vaishnavi. She is also the part of the same team. So today we will be discussing about how we can make Nuba more resilient by eliminating the single point of failure. So I would like to know how many of you have actually heard about Nuba? Any hand? Okay, just one, two. Okay, yeah, that's great because I have included introduction to Nuba. So yeah, great. So yeah, so this is the agenda for the today's topic. So we'll firstly go through the introduction to Nuba. We'll then go understand the Nuba architecture, and then we'll see how this single point of failure plays role in the Nuba environment, right? And then what we can do to mitigate it. So what is Nuba? Let's try to understand that. Nuba is a software-defined storage platform that is used to manage your object storage across like diverse environments. So what do I mean when I say diverse environments? They can be any cloud, public cloud platforms such as Azure, AWS, GCP, or it could be any S3 compliant private clouds as well. It could also be any storage drives that you may have. It just needs to have a volume and a file system on top so that they can connect to Nuba. So what does this do is it makes the user's job a lot easier. You can have your storage spread across different environments and you can manage them at the same time at the same platform. So Nuba has bucket policies. These are just the rules that tell where you should put the data. Like you can define these policies by yourself. They are customizable. So these policies, they provide these multi-cloud capabilities like replication, mirroring, tiering, and namespace. And the goal here is to, again, like I said, to simplify your job. You can manage your data across diverse environments using the same platform. So why you should use Nuba? It is, again, it's a multi-cloud solution. So this eliminates the vendor lock-in. You're not tied to a single vendor here. You can have your multi-clouds. You can also have an on-prem CEF cluster as a storage backend for Nuba. You also can use your regular storage drives as well. So it's not tied to a specific vendor. Again, it provides S3 compatible API, so whenever you put your data, you put it through your S3 API. So it's a standard, de facto standard API. So again, not tied to any specific vendor. Again, this increases the high availability of your data. You can have a single bucket mirrored across different platforms. So let's say one of your backend storage goes down, you still have your data available at some other place, so you still have your data, right? Again, it's a storage orchestrator tool, so it can, manage your storage. It consumes storage from diverse environments. It also provides bucket policies that are highly customizable, so you can set rules where you should put your data depending on your requirements. Again, these are very highly dynamic, so a lot of times our project starts with one set of requirements and then it ends up being something else, right? Your architecture changes, your demands might change. You may start with a block storage, then you might just start requiring object storage. Your platform requirements can also change. So in those scenarios, these bucket policies are very helpful. You can just change them dynamically and use them. And again, we, on top of your existing storage layer, we also get compression, deduplication, and encryption. So this also adds a security, like added layer of security. Again, we also get agility. In Nuba, we can migrate the data without any disruption in services. So, you know, imagine you have a setup that you used, you know, you built it on-prem, right? Now your client requires some cloud involvement in that setup. Now you have acquired cloud license, you have cloud storage, but how are you going to migrate the data? In Nuba, you can just use a mirrored bucket. You can, whatever your existing bucket, you can just mirror it. Your data will be mirrored directly to your cloud storage. Now you can get rid of your on-prem bucket. That you can also do. General workloads for object storage, they can be media, backup, or archival type of, workload. This is just a generic thing. Can you do the next? So this is just a basic overview for Nuba, like how we usually see Nuba, when you talk about your client and backend sort of a thing. So you have your applications. Your applications will directly talk to your S3 APIs, that Nuba S3 API. Your Nuba S3 API does it processes the data. And in the backend, you have all the storage, backends such as AWS, Google. It could also be Ceph or any multiple different location. Your backend storage can be. This is the Nuba platform. When your client puts data in the S3 API, the Nuba S3 endpoint, it will process the data. Depending on how you have configured your bucket policies, it will put the data across these diverse, backends. So, for example, if you have multi-cloud buckets, your data will be spread across these multiple clouds. If you have hybrid, it would be on-prem and some other cloud. And multi-site, it would be on different multiple locations. So for the scope of this topic, we are talking about Nuba deployed on a Kubernetes platform because that's where, most of the agile workload, we have seen customers deploy, right? So next. So this is what happens to your data when you put it in your Nuba S3 API. So this is just an example of Mona Lisa, the picture. So you put it in your S3 endpoint. It will firstly get fragmented. We fragment the data in 4 MB chunks. Then it gets deduplication. If there is any repetitive data, it will be eliminated. Then we compress the data for better storage utilization. And then the encryption takes place. Once you encrypt the data, depending upon how you have configured the bucket policies, it will be stored across different environments. Next. So these are the basic core components for Nuba. You have Nuba core, you have Nuba endpoint, and you have Nuba agent. Next. So this is the architecture. We'll talk about the data flow here. We have your application writing data directly to the S3 endpoint. Then we again here have Nuba core, Nuba DB, and the Nuba agent daemon. So your data, once it goes inside your S3 endpoint, it will do all the heavy lifting. It will compress, deduplicate, encrypt the data. Then it will send the metadata to your Nuba core. Nuba core will then process the metadata. Generally, metadata contains the bucket details, where you want to put the data, which bucket, and what bucket policies that bucket has. So for example, if I have a multi-cloud bucket, I'm putting data in a bucket B1, and it's a multi-cloud bucket. That information will go to the Nuba core. And NubaDB, it stores a lot of bucket-related metadata, like where your objects are stored, what bucket they are stored in, what is the bucket policies, all the configuration-related details. So with the help of Nuba database, Nuba core will calculate where to put the data, and it will send the instructions back to the Nuba endpoint. And then Nuba endpoint will actually store the data in your backend, depending on where it is. So once the data is stored, it will send the acknowledgement back to your Nuba core, and then Nuba core will update your Nuba database, and you know, the cycle, that's how it's completed. Here we have you know, scalable Nuba storage node, which basically is a Nuba agent. It's a daemon that keeps track of statuses of all these components. In case your backend storage is not available, it will try to, you know, ping that and make sure that it is available. If it's not, it will mark it as down. And yeah, basically it keeps track of it and updates the status. Again, it goes back to Nuba core and sends what all data, you know, analytics they have gathered. And it again updates the Nuba DB with the current statuses of the, you know, the whole cluster, and you know, again, cycle continues. This is the data path for Nuba architecture. Again, Nuba DB here is, as you might have seen, it's very important. It's a core component for Nuba because it contains all the bucket information, such as configuration. It contains account and access keys, bucket policies. Again, it contains the metadata related to that. Backing store and cloud connection information is also there. Mapping of object to bucket, right? Where my each object is stored, at what location, that is also stored inside your Nuba DB. It also has encryption keys. It also has system status and statistics. So yeah, you might have gotten an idea like how important it is. So without this Nuba DB, we cannot, you know, access our data, because again, right, all the access related information is stored inside here. So what we can do to, you know, to understand how we can fix this situation in case something goes wrong, right? So we have Vaishnavi discussing what we can do.
So
okay, sorry. So till now we discussed the architecture of the Nuba, why we should use the Nuba, and what's the workflow. Now we'll discuss the understanding and single point of failure in the Nuba. So as we discussed earlier, Nuba metadata, Nuba DB is very important because it knows the location of the object, where the actual object stored in the background. Whenever we write any data, its metadata gets written in the Nuba DB. So it has to go to the Nuba DB, and when we want to read the data from the backend storage, we need to know the location. So again, we need to go to the Nuba DB to know the location to read the object. So Nuba DB stores the crucial metadata. So Nuba database storage is scalable to handle the increased load and ensuring the flexibility. So as time passes, our storage might get increased along with the metadata. So if we want to scale out the, increase the size of Nuba DB, we can do that. We can just increase the size. So that's what flexibility is. So as mentioned, every operation of the Nuba DB has to pass through the database. So in case of any failure happens, it lead to the disconnection between the data and the client IO, which results in the system failure. Again, I'm repeating, if the database layer is corrupted, it's obviously going to impact our overall Nuba cluster. So how you will identify the Nuba DB is corrupted? Suppose from the client side, client is unable to write the data or unable to read the data from the cluster. And also if the client is unable to create a new object claims from the cluster. So this is what customer will observe. But from the system administrator perspective, we will see that Nuba pod fails to come up. How we will troubleshoot this kind of issues? So if Nuba pod is not coming up, then we can just start with checking the describe output of the YAML, and then we can check the events of that specific namespace. In the namespace, in the events, if we observe FSCK found error on the device, specifically on dev RBD 0, if the backend storage is safe, then we'll have RBD, and could not found, then there is a possibility of the database corruption. In the second scenario, if the NubaDB pod is failed to start, we will observe these kind of messages in the NubaDB pod log, that is, could not start server. And from the database log, we'll see could not locate and validate the checkpoint record. So this scenario will observe if the node get crashed unexpectedly or rebooted unexpectedly. If all Nuba pods are up and running, but still object bucket claims are not getting created or still clients are impacted, then we can check from the backing store perspective. If the backing store is stuck in a connecting phase, and if our DB dump fails with this kind of error, that is invalid page in the block, then again there is a possibility of the data loss. There might be more possibilities, but these are some general scenarios that we have seen till now. So this is how we can identify that our NubaDB is corrupted. No one wants our cluster in that scenario, right? So let's see how there are a few ways we can mitigate this single point of failure. Let's take a look one by one. So first way is using external PostgreSQL. In a, generally in Nuba, we use a single instance of Nuba PVC. But in the external PostgreSQL cluster, use NubaDB as it provides the database level replication. So in case of any corruption happens of the database, we'll still have another copy available. So we'll not lose the access to the database. So you can use the external PostgreSQL cluster to avoid the single point of failure. External PostgreSQL cluster also supports the SSL. Let's take a look at the prerequisites if we want to use the external database cluster. First, obviously, we need to have the valid working PostgreSQL accessible endpoint for the external pod. Second, the empty database where we can store the NubaDB's metadata. And for that, we can use this command to create specifically with this ltcolocate. Third one is we should have correct username and password to create tables in the database. Next. So in this method, we're gonna clone the NubaDB PVC periodically. So Kubernetes provides the feature called cloning, which is point-in-time copy of the data. So if we create a clone of the PVC in the backend side, it will create one more PVC and it will store the point-in-time copy of the data on that PVC. Cloning supports CSI driver as well as dynamic provisioning. So we can clone the DB PVC periodically to take a backup, and whenever required, we can just restore it. So we can, to do that, we can create a Kubernetes job in the Kubernetes cluster. So basically, it's system administrator responsibility to decide how many jobs they want per day and their retention period as well. Because whenever, as we are creating a clones, it will also going to consume the space in the cluster. Let's take an example. If my current NubaDB is 50 GB and I'm 3 backups are taken per day, then it will be 50 to 3, 150 GB data will require to take a backup. And also if the backend storage is safe, then replication must be considered. So keeping all this thing in the mind, we need to decide how many backups and their retention period as well. Let's take a look to steps to restore the DB using the clone. As discussed, we need to clone the DB PVC periodically to have the up-to-date backups. For restoring, we can just scale down the NubaDB stateful set, delete the older corrupted data, and we need to identify the latest healthy clone, because that would be obviously before the data corruption happens. And then we can create a new clone with the original PVC name, because whenever we scale up the NubaDB set, stateful set, it will look for that specific PVC name. That's why we need to give the original PVC name. And then we can just scale up the NubaDB stateful set and we can check the pod status. It should be up and running. Next. So in the previous method, actually we took a backup of the whole NubaDB PVC. But here in this scenario, we'll take a dump of the database. So in case of any failure happens, we can just restore the healthy NubaDB dump from the backup folder. Let's take a look at the steps, how can we do that. So steps to restore the data. We should take a backup of the all Nuba related secrets first to the local folder, and then backup the PostgreSQL database to a local folder. This is just an example command. We need to go to the NubaDB port first, and then we'll just pg dump nb core to take a backup. And as we took a backup inside the pod, we need to copy to the local machine. This is copy command. And if any corruption happens for the restoration, we need to stop the NubaDB service before we restore, and then verify the all components are zero. And then obviously we need to clear the older corrupted data and then restore from the local folder. Again, if the backup folder is on local machine, so we have to copy that inside the pod, and then we'll just run the pg restore command. So it will just restore the healthy data from that dump to the database. And then we'll again delete the older corrupted secrets and we'll restore them from the local folder. And then we can just try to restart the Nuba service. It will be up and running. So these are three ways that we can follow to avoid a single point of failure in the Nuba. So anybody has any questions?